And on page 11, the section we're going to start with is called honesty. And this section is a section that the Course in Miracles describes how we will be the ones we allow our minds to be healed and we really allow ourselves to get in touch with the love that we really are. So this is really talking about the way we will be when we're demonstrating love, not necessarily the way we are able to express ourselves right now. Okay, so we're hearing like, what are the characteristics of a mind that really loves? What's the characteristics of a person that's really honest? And so the Course definition of that is so cool because we know we don't have to believe any of this, and so we don't have to believe it, we can hear it. Okay, that's the only rule. You don't have to believe none of it, so that opens our minds. So now I can listen to it, you know. It says all of the traits of God's teachers rest on trust. Once trust has been achieved, the other characteristics can't fail to follow. So basically, it's only the trusting that can afford honesty, because it's only a person that's trusting that can see the value of honesty. So a person that trusts is a person that sees the value of honesty. A person that doesn't trust is a person that sees value in dishonesty. Okay? It says honesty does not apply only to what you say. So honesty isn't about what I say to you. It says honesty actually means consistency. So if I'm an honest person, I'm a consistent person. For instance, if every time you saw me, you didn't know if I was going to attack you or praise you, then I'm dishonest because I'm inconsistent. And the Course says, when you're really honest, there's nothing you say that contradicts what you think. So what you think is what you're saying. You don't have any thought in your mind that opposes any other thought in your mind. You don't act in any way that's opposite to your word. And when you're honest, there's not one word that you have that lacks agreement with another word. And that's deep. I love it. He said, if you're truly honest, at no level are you in conflict with yourself. So a quick honesty test is, if I'm feeling a lot of conflict, if I'm feeling a lot of fear, then I am not being truly honest with myself. If I was being truly honest with myself, I would not be in conflict within myself. Well, I think one of the things that's such a trip about the Course in Miracles for me is that a lot of the reason why I haven't really allowed myself to move as fast as I wanted to on my spiritual path is that I would tell myself that what I was trying to learn was real complicated, and once I could understand all this complicated stuff, then I would go ahead and do it. And I realized that the Course is so simple that you just have to admit you don't want to do it. But you can't say you don't understand. In other words, for instance, like he says, at no level is anybody that's truly honest in conflict with themselves. That you can't get more. So therefore, if I'm in conflict with myself, I'm not being truly honest with myself. That's very simple. But it would take so much honesty with yourself to be able to admit that. You know, I'm in conflict about my marriage because I'm not being truly honest with myself about my marriage. I'm in conflict financially in my life because I'm not really truly being honest with myself financially. I'm in conflict about my relationship to God. I'm in conflict about my relationship with myself because I'm not truly being honest with myself. I'm not truly being honest about my relationship with a higher power. Now, my mind goes, well, what am I being dishonest about? And the Course is saying, don't even go on that search of trying to find out what you're being dishonest about. The only thing that we want to recognize is that at some level I'm not being consistent. That's all. At some level I'm not being consistent with myself. And what does that mean? Well, for some reason I'm not treating myself good all the time. For some reason, I'm not letting myself have peace all the time. In other words, I'm not being consistent in the way I treat myself. I'm going to treat myself good all the time, not just on holidays, not just on my birthday, and not just because I have a cool relationship, and not just because I just got this money, and not just because I just got this promotion. I'm going to feel good about myself. I'm going to love myself all the time. I'm going to know the love I am consistently, so I won't be in conflict with myself. He says, if you're not in conflict with yourself, it's impossible for you to be in conflict with anybody. or anything. So if I'm in conflict with somebody else, it's because I'm in conflict with myself. If I'm always arguing with somebody else, it's because I'm really arguing with myself, but I don't know it. So that's how I can tell what's really going on. If I'm in conflict with you, then I have some inner conflict. That's where my conflict with you is coming from. That's deep. Any thoughts about that paragraph?
Well, how does PMS fit into all this?
Okay, the way PMS fits into all of it is that PMS is another way to make you forget that you have an unlimited spiritual identity beyond your body. And PMS makes you focus in on your physical body and lose sight of your spiritual identity because you're caught up with the pain. So then it's hard for you to remember the truth. So the purpose of PMS is to so preoccupy your mind that you can't remember the truth about yourself and the peace about yourself. And PMS could be used to remind you of the truth about yourself. So every time you get the PMS, you can remind yourself that you're not your PMS. And if you would remind yourself that you're not your PMS, eventually your PMS would go away. Because the purpose of it is to make you forget your peace. That's deep, isn't it? That's deep. I mean, so when I say stuff like this back to you, I'm just seeing what the Course says to me. You know what I'm saying? And it, because that's a different answer. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, you know, so I guess it's like when you came in and you were saying, you know, your eye was watering. And then we would be prone, like you said, to say it's an allergy, right? But then that's still another way to make us think that we are victims of our body and that things just happen to us that we don't have anything to do with. Now I'm a victim of the allergy. So all physical explanations of things are ultimately just tricks that we come up with to make ourselves think that we're not creating what's happening to us. That's really what physical things are according to the Course. What we call problems is just another way for us to think that we are a victim of things and that we're not true creators. And people tend to be okay about owning the creating of some things, but they have other things that they don't want to own that they created, right? And that's why that theory doesn't fly with most people. It's okay to hear that I'm the creator of my experience if I just created a $100,000 year raise. But it's hard for me to hear that I'm the creator of my own experience and I've had one abusive relationship after another. See what I mean? So we want to pick and choose what in our lives the truth applies to. And the one that we're willing to own, we'll take responsibility for. The ones that we create that we're not willing to own is what we project into everybody else and say they're the ones who caused it to happen. And then it looks like they did, so we don't go beyond the obvious. Because it does look like my daddy did that to me. So the Course says what happens is that we just don't go beyond the obvious. Because it looks obvious, like it did happen to you. And so the conscious being is the one that's questioning that. It's saying, I know it looks like it happened to me. It looks like I'm a victim. But I want to go beyond that idea that I'm a victim. I want to go beyond the obviousness of that. Because that's where I see most of my brothers and sisters caught up, blaming each other. You know, y'all see the blame game? It's like, if you reach a point on your spiritual path that you realize everybody that's doing that is innocent, but you just don't want to play it no more. And so you still let them do it. Like, I still let people fuss and fight and argue as much as they want to. You know, if the person could sit up in this class and they could tell me how I'm crazy and how they don't agree with me and how they, you know, all that. And you know something? If I expected everybody to agree with me, I shouldn't even be sitting in front of a room.
They would be sitting there.
You know, because you know, the most powerful thought though is to really realize it doesn't matter. It truly doesn't matter if anybody else agrees with you. It truly doesn't matter what somebody believes me. It really doesn't matter because it doesn't have to have any effect at all on whether or not I apply it to my own life. So what difference does it make if you say, I don't believe the Course in Miracles? Okay, you don't believe the Course in Miracles. Now, that's supposed to stop me? No. You know, and as a matter of fact, in order for me to be in a reality where I'm free to think what I want to think, then I really have to support you thinking what you want to think, even if you want to think that the Course in Miracles is a bunch of crap. Because every time I support your right to think that, then I create more freedom in my mind. And so that means I'll be surrounded by people who will also let me have my thoughts without trying to control me. Because I'm letting you have your thoughts without trying to control you. Does it make sense? So that's why whether people agree with me or not, I don't care. If they have the freedom to disagree, I'll have the freedom to disagree. I'll create a reality where I have the same freedom.
That's an ultimate sign of love, because you're letting them have their own stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean it has to validate you.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, the more you let them have their own stuff, the more the universe will let you have your own stuff. Mm-hmm. See, I like how the Course takes the law of self-preservation and uses it to our advantage. It's like, I'll be loving if you can show me how it's going to help me. That's the way the human mind operates. You show me how it's for my benefit for you to win, and I'll be the hardest person in this room helping you win. You just have to show me how it's really to my benefit. And that's what this whole book does. But it's like one of the first books I've ever read that was a spiritual book that constantly made me aware of how it was to my own benefit to do all the things that people had always been telling me I ought to do. All of a sudden, it's to my benefit if I do that, if I let you be. It's to my benefit if I don't try to attack you. It's to my benefit if I see you as part of me. It's to my benefit if I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. Okay.
Yeah, because the ego's been telling us to try and make people
mm-hmm.
believe the way I believe, so mm-hmm. it validates me. That's all ego.
Yeah, and it's so imprisoning for the person that's running it down. Mm-hmm. It's like they're going to be surrounded by people who are trying to control them, because they're controlling. I'm a control freak, right? I'm Girl Purdy is a control freak. All right, so how does a control freak use his control freakness to his spiritual advantage? Okay, you tell me that the way to have control in any situation, which I want to have, is to give up control in every situation. And that's what this book did. So my control freak self still gets a chance to feel real good. But but it's controlling in a way that no one will ever oppose me. Check it out. You know, nobody in this room is going to oppose me trying to control you by not trying to control you. You're not going to oppose that at all. Nobody, right. So that's the ultimate control. That's like having the ultimate control. And that's what I want. I want the ultimate control. And the ultimate control is to give up the control to that which is higher and greater than you. So I love this stuff, man. It's like it says right here. It says the peace of mind which the advanced teachers of God experience is largely due to their perfect honesty. It's only the wish to deceive that makes for war. No one at one with himself can even conceive of conflict. If you were really at one with yourself, he said, you can even conceive of conflict. Conflict is the inevitable result of self-deception. And self-deception is dishonesty. So why am I in conflict? Because I'm deceiving myself. And that's dishonesty. So I'm in conflict because I'm being dishonest. I'm being inconsistent with myself. He says, there is no challenge. Check this out. There is no challenge to a teacher of God. There is no challenge to a demonstrator of love. Of course, there's a teacher, a demonstrator, and God is love. So it's a fancy way of saying, if I was really demonstrating real love, I mean the real deal, not the kind we practice. Now, the Course, it really helped me understand that what we call love is pathetic. It is not love. What we do here isn't love. Okay? Because our love singles out, and it's exclusive, and it's special. That's not love. Love is not going to omit anybody. Love is going to cover everybody. Okay, so he says to a real demonstrator of love, they wouldn't even have a challenge because because if you were having a challenge, it would mean that you were doubting that God or love or truth could handle it. I could only have a challenge if I doubt it. If I was certain, it wouldn't be a challenge. If I was certain I could do it, it wouldn't be a challenge. So challenge, because this idea of challenge implies doubt. Why certainty means that you have no doubt. So if it's a challenge for me to love you, I'm doubting if I can. I'm having to make myself do something that I don't know if I have the capacity to do. That's why it's a challenge for me. But if I was certain I love you, it wouldn't be no challenge. I'm only having a hard time loving the people I'm not sure I love anyway. Isn't that right? I mean, I know that sounds deep, just put it that way. You know, and you don't have to agree, but I love being able to throw these thoughts out because they just make you think, you know. It says, the trust on which God's teachers rest secure makes doubt impossible. Therefore, a teacher of God can only succeed. So if I was really demonstrating love, I would only succeed. He said, and in this, as in all things, he says, we are honest. We can only succeed because we never do our will alone. Now, what does it mean to say that, okay, I'm going to succeed because I am not going to do my will alone? What does that mean? He says, right, I'll tell you what it means. It says, I'm going to choose for all mankind. I'm going to choose for all the world. I'm going to choose for everything in the world. I'm going to choose for what changes and what doesn't change. Beyond appearances, I'm going to choose for me and I'm going to choose for God. In other words, I'm going to choose for God for all of you all. Whether you choose for God or not, I will choose for love for you. And so I'll succeed. Because I want the same cool stuff to come to me. I want the same cool stuff in the way that's best for you to come to you. I want the love to come to me. I want the love to come to you. I have to succeed because I'm choosing for you and I'm choosing for God. I'm choosing for all of us to have peace and all of us to have love. And that's why I'm going to succeed because there's no way you can fail when everybody's included. So, I've chosen for everybody in this room, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you do exactly what you do all for the rest of the day. You know what I mean? See, if you choose for my happiness, then you've done everything that you're supposed to do for me. Now you're not supposed to stick around and make sure that I do it. Okay, you know, that's deep in it. Look, brother, I've chosen for you to be happy. Now, what does that mean from my perspective? It means that I'm not going to try to do anything to harm you.
And you're not attached to the results.
And so therefore I'm not attached to the result because I have done my part. I have become another safe being in your life. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm supposed to do. The rest of it is up to you. That's what's so cool about it. So because I used to think I had to like change everybody around me and get everybody around me to get it. And try to tell them how they was wrong. I don't know. Sometimes when you're in a conversation, I've noticed. I was wondering why a lot of times I don't like conversations. And I was having one other day that I wasn't particularly. I was having one that I wasn't particularly enjoying. And I was like asking myself now, because I should have, because I totally love the people I was having the conversation with, but I wasn't enjoying the conversation. And so I was asking myself, well, what is it about this conversation that I don't enjoy? Well, I was watching a pattern that was happening in the conversation. Which was, every time somebody would say something, the other people would try to figure out some way to give an opposite point of view to what they just said. So if that person said, well, you know, I really think that, you know, the weather in Colorado is really hot. Well, instead of saying, just letting that person say that, the next person would have to say, well, you know, I don't really think it's that hot. I think the weather in Colorado is really cold. You know, it's like I saw that everybody was trying to establish their individuality by never agreeing with anybody else. And that was the way that they were making themselves exist as a separate being, was to never agree. And so they didn't realize that what they were saying to each other over and over again was, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you are wrong, you are wrong, you are wrong, you are wrong. That's all you're saying to the person. The minute they say something and you feel it's your duty to give them your point of view or the opposite point of view or whatever, you're just saying what you just said was wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. And nobody likes to hear they're wrong all the time, even if they don't realize at a conscious level that's what's going on. So after a while, people stop talking to you. And then you wonder why you don't know anything about the people around you, is that they get tired of your endless correction of everything they say, so they just stop talking to you because they realize the easiest way to enjoy being around you is to not talk to you because that lessens the possibility that they'll have to hear your opinion. Now, that's deep. And so I realized that was exactly what was going on. It was like, It's like every idea I had, I knew right ahead that idea, I would have to defend it. It's like for everything I said, then they're going to say, well, you know, it's so then I got to come back with, well, you know, but the way I really say it, man, it was da-da-da-da. And so all of a sudden, I just did it. I just went into silence. I just went totally into silence. You know, it's like, and not from a sense of anger or anything. It was like the most ultimate conservation of energy that I could have ever done for myself. I felt myself rest and become more powerful because I was totally undefended. And so then I got this tremendous gift out of it. And then I had the joy of then getting on the telephone and then having a conversation with someone who shared the thought system that I have about, it's not about correcting people all the time. It really is about letting people share their thoughts and just hearing them. That doesn't mean you necessarily agree with it, but, you know, the most healing thing you can do for a person is just get them the space to say what they want to say without trying to fix them or judge them. And I was having one of those conversations. And the difference in what was communicated and the love and the energy that was exchanged in that conversation was phenomenal. So by the time that conversation was over, I was 6 feet off the ground. Had I kept taking part in the opposition conversation, I would have been totally drained by the end of the evening. So my higher self saved me by shutting me up because it knew if I stopped talking, the conversation would end faster. If the purpose of the conversation is to never agree. Now that's, which is different from talking to somebody. Sometimes you might say, you know, I really need another way of looking at this. Maybe you can give me another point of view on this issue. Then that's okay. You fair game at that point. But if I don't ask for that, that means I must be reasonably comfortable with what I'm telling you. Well, I would say to you, would you please give me another way of looking at that? But if I'm just talking to you, then I'm pretty much saying it the way I feel like I want to say it. That's why I didn't ask you to give me another way to look at it, right? So you feel the closest with people who honor you enough to believe that you got sense enough to say things the way you want to say it and not the way they want you to say it. You have to be the most ultimate psychic to be able to say everything the way another person would want you to say it. But then people talk to you like you should have. It's wild. So when I started this book, it's like it's so mind-boggling to me because it's so simple and so powerful, and you'll find your mind starting to work like that where you go, oh, okay, this isn't a real conversation. This is a competition. This is not a conversation. This is a competition as to who's right. That's not no fun. Not to me. Does that make any sense? Everybody with me on this?
You know, one of my Course in Miracles teachers taught early on that if you're in a conversation where somebody's bad-mouthing somebody or you're judgmental or where it's not going where your values are, and this is the trick that we used was to say, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing that with my sister.
It works.
And she goes, I know what you're doing. Because I won't argue with her. I don't necessarily agree with her or, you know, because she wants to get into religious debates. And I don't follow what she believes, but she's trying to convince me that her way is the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say, that's interesting. And mm-hmm. she'll go, I know what you're doing. And I'm like, good. Stop talking about this.
Yeah.
Stop trying to convince me. You know, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. I'm just going to let you speak your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But that's interesting. It's so noncommittal.
Mm-hmm.
You don't agree. You don't disagree.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting.
Here's another one. I hear you.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah.
Because I hear you, for me, is really what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's really what they want. They really want someone to hear them. It's not even, I found it wasn't even so much about getting me to change my mind. They really just wanted someone to hear them. Because that's the way I feel. When I'm talking and I'm around what I call the doctor correctors, and they feel like their job on the planet Earth is to correct everybody around them and what they're saying and what they're, you get that a lot in the New Age, New Thought community. You say something, everybody pounce on you with the right way you should look at it, or the thing you shouldn't. You should never say that because, you know, you're going to do, you know. So you get all, so everybody, like, they like jump on you, you know. And the truth is, if it really does have no power, there's no need for you to say anything. You know, if you believe in the devil, and I don't believe in the devil, then the truth will reveal which one is true. There's no need to argue about whatever is real. It will reveal itself. I don't have to make sure that what's real is going to reveal itself. It's going to reveal itself. You don't have to worry about it. If you tell somebody you love them, I guarantee you everything that's not love is going to come up between you, because you're getting rid of all the impurities of the energy. You're seeing what it is that's keeping you from really having that love you want to have. That's why it seems like a relationship is going great and you get what they call serious. It just means that all of a sudden you made some kind of commitment that y'all really wanted to join. Okay, now that you made that commitment, y'all call it, I love you. Okay, so that's really nice. I really want to join with you. Well, then everything that could keep us from not joining is going to come up to be released and to be healed. And if you don't know that, then as soon as something comes up in the relationship that freaks you out, you break the relationship up, because you've lost sight of the fact that because you love each other, you want to get everything that's not love out of there. And it's going to come up. It's going to come up to be released. But people with the romantic idea about love, they freak out as soon as anything comes up, because they think their idea of love means that they're going to have this nonstop peace that they haven't even reached a level of consciousness to create. You can have nonstop peace, but you ain't going to create it from the level of consciousness we own. You know what I'm saying? Because we know we got conflict in our mind. So for me to sit up here and tell you all that in your relationship with me, we're going to always have smooth sailing no matter what, when I know I got conflict. I don't know about y'all, but I feel conflict sometimes about some things. So I know I'm not being truly honest with myself all the time, which means I'm going to occasionally conflict with others, because I've just been told that if I'm not consistent in myself, I'm going to have it reflected back at me through the conflict that comes back from the people around me. So I know, am I going to have some days that somebody going to, you know, say something? Of course I am. How do I know? Because I'm in conflict. Because I don't feel 100% peaceful in every area of my life. How could I be in a world that's 100% peaceful if it's a reflection of my own consciousness? So I don't have those unrealistic expectations of, I'm going to wake up today and everything is going to go really smooth all day and I'm not going to get upset about anything. No, I know that's not going to happen. Why? Because I don't feel 100% peace and 100% love now. So when those things come up, then all I got to do is remind myself that this is just what I thought was going to happen because I'm not always loving yet. So I can forgive it. Okay? I'm not perfect yet. They're not perfect either. We can let it go. Because we both learn it. See, that's what I learned through the course. And that work, that has resulted in many more healing long-term relationships than I ever experienced when I had that ego-romantic notion of, you know, we're going to always love each other and there won't be anything ever come up between us. And if you do, if it does, then you somehow betrayed me, because you were supposed to be loving every second and never get mad at me. You promised me that you were never going to attack me ever, 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 ever. It's like, get real. Get honest. What do you mean? You know, I don't know how to love unconditionally. No, I don't know. But you know what? I want to love unconditionally. Yeah, I do. I really do. I want to move toward that. I don't want to move toward relationships where the person got more conditions on me. You know? You know, it's interesting. Like I said, I'm not in a primary relationship right now with anybody. So it's been real interesting dealing with the relationship thing from the perspective of the course, and not compromising about that, and then watching how few people there are to play with when you really want to practice love. That is such a trip to see how many people are scared to death of a nice, loving, respectful, aware person. It scares them to death. They think you got to be the biggest con artist that ever lived if you're truly kind and truly loving. It's amazing how afraid we are of loving people when we don't love. Now, if we're a loving person, then we go, right on. Great. Whoa, I've been looking for you. Where you been all my life? You know what I'm saying? But if you're a fearful person, and you walk up on a loving person, you can't conceive of that person being more honest, more kind, and nicer than you are. Because a fearful person is judging everything by their own ego. They're judging everything by themselves. So they literally don't think people are capable of what they're not capable of.
Judging by the past.
They're judged by the past. It's deep. So looking beyond the body has been a very interesting thing to do during this process. You know what I'm saying? Because it's so easy when you go out and you meet people to you look at their bodies and you like the way they look. And because you like the way they look, you will want them. And then you start to wake up and you realize how totally insane it is to just want somebody because of the way they look. But at the same time, you know that's exactly the way you are. That's the way 90% of the people around you are. They talk that stuff about wanting the spiritual person. But when the person shows up that's making $300,000 a year, even if they're unconscious, they'll be jumping in their car and riding off. Or if they go out and they see somebody that's cute, they'll choose their cute person. You know what I'm saying? And we all do it. So it's like I'm watching all this stuff, right? The same stuff I used to do. And then all of a sudden I saw why I had so many challenges in my relationships. Because I was being dishonest. I wasn't being consistent. I wasn't consistently going for what I said I really wanted. So I was being dishonest with myself. Then into a relationship with someone that I'm being dishonest with. Then wonder why we're in conflict.
Yeah, if you could take, I mean, I had a sponsee I was working with yesterday, and she's looking in the mirror, and she was talking about how what she sees in the mirror, she doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what if you took the body away? Do you
mm-hmm.
like what's in there?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's most important. What you like inside there.
Right. You know? We were just talking about that on the way over here. Today. I mean, that's exactly right. I always tell people, a surefire test about whether or not you're with the person you should be with, one of the ways you can get that, would you want to be with that person if they didn't have a body?
Mm-hmm.
And I said it all the time in my classes. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is take a minute and go, would I want to be with that person if they didn't have a body? And all I had was their mind and their conversation. And you'll see real quick whether you're with that person because of the body or you're with that person because of the mind or both. You'll see it really quick. Because you know in a minute, would I really like to be on an island with my mama's mind? You know, this is a great person. I'm really turned on by this person. But I want to spend the rest of my life with this person without their body. And I just had to deal with the way they think and their mind and what they talk about and what they're about. And all of a sudden you'll see it. You'll go, whoa, I'm really into this person for their body. I'm into this person for the way they look. I'm not into this person for who they really are and how they really think. Or you'll go, you know, And thank God I had a lot of people in my life like that. I went, you know, if that person didn't have a body, I still would like to be around them because the way they think and the way they communicate is really cool. And you'll see it really quick.
Is it okay to have it be
both?
With both?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That was the third option. You either see it's both of them or one of them. You know, hopefully it's both of them. Then you hit the jackpot. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I think that if you really go for what you really want and you really mean it, I'm convinced that it will come to you in the form that you will like it in. I really do. I really believe if you're not compromising and you really, really, really go for the love, you go for the content, that content is going to somehow manifest itself in the perfect form that you like it in.
It probably needs to be the mind before the body.
Exactly. And that's why I was saying the content, the mind, right? And that mind will create the body. Because how could a mind that's really truly full of love, and your mind is truly full of love, not see the body as cool?
Mm-hmm.
It would be,
beautiful.
Yeah. You would see it as beautiful, really. And here's the kicker that most of us, it's hard for us to get. You would see it as beautiful no matter what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so inconceivable to the average mind. But if love is behind what you're doing, you don't see anything but stuff to love. You wouldn't go, oh, they weighed 500 pounds. I couldn't possibly love her. It would never cross your mind if you was really seeing it with love. That would never enter your consciousness if you really didn't with love. The mere fact that I wouldn't want you unless you looked a certain way is the way I know it's not really love.
That's so against the way society shows it.
Especially now.
Everything is just all
around. Especially now. I mean, even when, you know, it's like, I watch MTV sometimes, and yeah. I watch the most interesting thing. I noticed that the rappers and the guys can look like anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can look like the most ugly, weird things you've ever seen. But you don't see one female singer or performer that doesn't look exactly like the textbook description of what a pretty woman is supposed to look like. And so even if you're as talented as you can be, if you don't fit into that physical image, you don't even get a chance to sing. You don't even get a chance to perform. And that is so, and so, and back in the day, that was not the case when I was growing up. Singers, male and females, came in all shapes and sizes, and they were singing their butts off. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like watching these impossible levels of standards of beauty that's being projected on these young women. And the weird thing that's happening is that I'm actually watching them take that idea and create bodies that look like those ideas. It's tripping me out. I mean, I used to go out and dance a lot, and I go out to clubs, and it used to be you walk into a place and it's like you might see somebody that's really strikingly beautiful among average people. You know what I'm saying? You might go, "Oh, wow, that looks like that could be Marilyn Monroe or something." You know what I'm saying? Now, everywhere you look around you, they look like the TV people. You know, that's what I call the TV people. It's like the TV people are now, I mean, they're clones, and they look like that. And it's like, and I was thinking, to me, what that is an example of is the power of thought. How we really can take an idea and really mold our body into that particular image. So on the one hand, it's to me a perfect demonstration that we do have control over our bodies and we do have control over how they look and everything else. But the fact that they might value themselves based on that, that's where the law of diminishing returns come in, right? Because we all know that that body's going to change. So if all of your value is around the way your body looks, then when your body starts changing, you're going to be freaking out, you know? And
that talks in Marianne Williamson's Luminati. She talks about how we've advanced all that. We advanced our bodies or the way we look, mm-hmm. or how much money we make, or the cars, but we're forgetting to advance our souls.
Technology is so far beyond our spiritual maturity. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's like giving a child, you know, dynamite. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the way it is right now. It's like now the children truly have all of the dynamite, and they're children. And all you do is read the paper, and when I read the paper, look at the news. I don't know about you all, but it always looks like children. It's like everything that's going on is what little children handle things, how little children look at things. But only little dysfunctional children. You know what I'm saying? But it's really, you know, you got my thing, I got your thing. We're gonna beat each other up until we, you know, I'm gonna take. You know, it's like then every minute is interspersed with, here's the latest toy, and then they do about 4 or 5 toy commercials. You know, they call it the SUV or the latest trip or the clothes. I mean, to me, it's like this is a gigantic playground for God children who have totally lost sight of their awareness that they are creating it. To me, it's like children just amped up to another level because we want our toys. We get mad when we don't have our toys. And then when somebody don't play the way we want them to play, we take our toys and when we go home. And then we have our little best friends. And then we be against them. And to me, it's all like we're children. That's how I kind of got in touch with more of my innocence, because I realized I was a God child who was surrounded by other God children. But I'm going into puberty. And so I'm in that in-between state where I'm a God child and I want to be a more spiritually aware adult. And I bet you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I get drawn back to my toys, and all of a sudden I'm beyond my toys, and I don't want to go back to the toys. And all of a sudden I want to put that to the toy box again, and no, I don't want to go back to the day. You know what I'm saying? It's that kind of energy. And then my inner self said, well, you know, what you got to realize is if you feel like playing with the toys, you're innocent, play with the toy. And then if you feel like going beyond the toy, you're innocent, go ahead and focus on what's beyond the toy. You're innocent in either state, and that'll help you go through this puberty, this spiritual puberty, a lot faster if you don't beat yourself up and still want to play with the toys every now and then, but you're still trying to move forward, but you still want to play with the toys every now and then, but you're not going to stay with the toys the way you used to because you're just too grown now. And so one day you're just going to find you're just not playing with the toy anymore. And you won't even remember the day you stopped playing with the toy. But don't try to force yourself not to want the car, not to want the house, not to want the body, not to want the money, not to want the trip, not to be, because that's going to keep you on the playground a lot longer, because you're going to be resisting it and be drawn to it over and over and over again until you stop feeling guilty about it. Stop resisting it. Let yourself experience it innocently and move on. Mm. Yeah.
I had an experience most recently through a sober bottom that I've been going through and experiencing my lusting over power and control, mm-hmm. and greed and money and mm-hmm. things. And I've been coming through the other side of it, and my realization hit me hard last week. My son and I went to the Nuggets game, and I had a friend of mine that got us back underneath by the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
He got us passes to go back, and my 11-year-old was with me, and he was just like in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And we're back there, and the athletes are coming out after they've showered, and they start giving autographs. And what was interesting to me was that because of my shift in perception around that situation, I was more looking at the athletes for what they had achieved as far as their athletic ability and mm-hmm. how good they were and being able to talk to them as a human being. Mm-hmm. And my 11-year-old was looking at them for the big Rolex watch that had diamonds covering mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. and the big earrings in their ears mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all the things and mm-hmm. the cars they drive mm-hmm. and everything else. And you know, I thought about that and I thought, God, he's 11-year-olds and this is what his perception is of success and mm-hmm. and you know, what society deems as these guys are, you know, to be looked at as gods, you mm-hmm. know, as idols,
mm-hmm.
and how my perception had kind of changed. But I had done the same thing to him as showing him that things were important and, you know, what kind of car I drive and how much money I make and all that stuff like you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And just
mm-hmm.
having that in perspective. Is the shift of perception.
That's it. You said it perfectly. You were both looking at the same thing, but we're getting totally different interpretations of it and totally different blessings out of it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so that's the exact same thing that's going to happen with the world we're in now. People like wonder, well, if I get enlightened or really get into the truth or really go towards spirit, am I going to have to sacrifice this and sacrifice my family, sacrifice my home, sacrifice my stuff? And no, you'll still be right here. But you'll be looking at it in a way that you will have peace where you used to be full of fear, apprehension, or conflict, or insecurity. But you still be here, you just won't have any of the conflicts that you used to have. And that's what the Course calls the real world. I mean, that's like heaven, to be here and not have the fear. To be here without the fear is the ultimate state that you could possibly be in. It's to be here and not be making yourself afraid, because he says, what you realize one day is that all your feelings are coming from you. So you're the one that's making yourself feel afraid. Nobody else is.
Problems
are and that a trip? And anyway, think of the power of that one day I'll really wake up and I'll get, Earl, are you feeling fear? You're making it. And then I'm going to stop. As if I can't solve that problem without fear. As if somehow fear is an ingredient to help us solve things. I could be in this moment right now, no matter what's happening in this moment right now, without worry. Worry is not a necessary ingredient for me to deal with whatever issues I got to deal with in my life right now. As a matter of fact, worry is distracting me from healing it right now. Worry is a distraction to keep from actually expressing yourself. It's a form of fear. It's another trick.
Man. A lot of tricks out there.
Yeah. You know, what's so funny is that that's the name of the game. The name of the game is to recognize the fear and not give into it and not allow it to rule you. People say, well, I just be seeing fear all the time. And one of my favorite lines in that book is it says, the more you look at your fear, the less you will see it. Yeah, and I've seen it to be true. It's like the more I be honest with myself about what I'm afraid of, the less I'm afraid of it. But when I tried to pretend like I, especially as a man, tried to always act like any form of fear was like the ultimate, like most horrible thing you could let yourself. I can't tell you how many men have looked me straight in the face and told me they were not afraid of anything. I mean, it's a very common statement among men. Men actually had audacity to look at you right in the face and say, I'm not afraid of anything.
That's because they're afraid to say they're afraid.
That's my whole point. They don't know that's the dead giveaway, because nobody that was remotely sane in terms of realizing where they are in the world would pretend that they're not afraid of anything, yet they're totally defensive and don't trust nobody. Those two things don't go together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust nobody and I'm leery of everyone, but I'm not afraid of anybody. So a conscious being immediately knows, I need to make a wide circle around this guy, and I'm certainly not going to get a ride home with him. So if anybody that deep in denial could wrap themselves around a post real easy, because they totally out of touch with what's going on. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, Mr. Denial. You know, I think the bus is coming out. I'll see you next time. I'm not getting in the car with you. You got to do stuff like that. I mean, the universe lets you be able to tell stuff, and then your ego still go, well, I'm going to ignore that and go ahead and deal with him anyway. It's like, okay, all right. You just saw him cuss the waiter out, totally cuss the waiter out, and because they're talking sweet to you right now, you're going to ignore that, and you're going to say something like, I'm so special. I know he would never cuss me out. So that's where your ego gets you. You know what I'm saying? Even though the universe just showed you, just gave you, said, this is another side that is there that you may not be aware of. So I'm going to let you see it in the form of the waiter coming up here to let you see completely what kind of personality you're dealing with. But my specialness says, oh, but she would never treat me that way. Yes, she would. If at any point you also did not act out her script, because that's the problem that the waiter is having right now. The waiter didn't act out their script, and they're reacting the way they react when people don't act out their script. So if you don't act out their script, they're going to react the same way to you. Right now, you're acting out their script. Y'all are trying to impress each other. This is the first night out. Y'all being as sweet as you can be. Both of you all's representatives are there having dinner. That's all at that dinner table, baby. Is your representative and my representative. You know what I'm saying? That's it. So next time, we're going to start off with tolerance. It's something I know you all have more than enough of, but we're gonna hit some more of those sections. I have classes that I do on Thursday at 7 o'clock and Wednesday at 12 noon and Sundays at 1 o'clock at Unity Temple Church. And I got some flyers if anybody wants. Well, here you go. The address is also on the flyer that's advertising this one. Anybody want one so you know where the other class is in case you ever...
Is that the same as what you emailed?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I want to tell y'all something. I really, really appreciate your openness and your willingness to listen to all this stuff. Really, it's so easy to go unconscious on the Course in Miracles. It's the easiest thing in the world to be teaching it and watch yourself teaching two people. You'll be looking at one person that's totally there, and you'll be watching another person that's totally out to lunch. And we all got those two parts when we listen to the truth. And you don't see it in yourself. Like, of course, if we don't see our own split mind, so we actually think we're being consistent. But everybody outside of us see our two selves. And that's what's so cool about trusting your friends, because if you really trusted each other, you really could save each other a lot of time. Because they see your ego better than they see theirs, and you see theirs better than you see yours. And so if you really trusted each other, you can hit each other off at the pass. Instead of getting defensive, when your friends say, you know, you might want to take a look at this, I kind of know, what do you mean? No, this, I'm your friend. That means I wouldn't be saying this because I'm trying to hurt you. I'm saying this because I want to be helpful to you. And if we trusted each other, then at the very least, you take a look at it and just go, okay, let me just take a look at it. I'm still going to come to my decision, but I am going to take a look at that. Because I know you can see my ego better than I can see my ego. And y'all can see your friends when they're getting ready to go off in the ego lane. Like, you see them headed out. You know what I'm saying? Something in the world has caught their attention. And so now it can be a relationship. It can be a job. It can be an ambition. They were conscious. But now there's something else in the world that they want. And so at that point, they become more defensive about hearing the truth because they're trying to deceive themselves again. And when people want to deceive themselves, the Course says they react to the truth as if they're being attacked.
Like a dog with a bone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're trying to grab a bone. You know what I'm saying? Wow. If I'm trying to deceive myself, if I'm trying to fool myself about something and I want to fool myself about something and I want to, and you try to give me the truth, I'm going to react like you're trying to attack me and hurt me. You know, so if you're around people right now and they want to fool themselves, all you can do really is surround them with light and remember the truth for them while they go ahead and take their little journey. Like Course calls it, where they take a detour into fear. I think that's a great way. Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's okay. Oh, okay. They just met a brand new person. Okay, they're getting ready to go into their detour in fear now. Yeah. So you go ahead and you let them have their detour, and you keep loving them while they're detouring. And two things are going to happen. Either their relationship is going to wake them up, or their relationship is going to cause them so much pain that they come back and want to do it differently. You know how it's going to turn out. It's either going to turn out that it's painful, and they're going to go, ooh. Or they're going to go, you know, this is the most loving, cool thing I've ever experienced, and I'm just going to see if I can express more love because this is so good. So you, either way it go, you win. Could it be this easy, you all? Could it really be this easy? Could we really have a day this cool? You know what I'm saying? If we really took these attitudes, can you imagine how much easier they would be today if you really let everybody be just the way they are? Trusting that if it's something you're supposed to tell them, you either already have told them or Spirit will make it real clear so you can feel innocent tonight when you go to bed because you'll know you've done everything you should have done all day just by being yourself. If we were to just be ourselves today, whoever that is, we would be doing everybody around us the favors that they've been wanting from us. They need to see you. Your friends and your relatives need to see you. They need to see you. You are the gift. You are the gift. All right. This is a love offering basket. Appreciate you sharing. I love you. The Course says that what we should do is ask to be able to recognize what we already have. So that's going to be my prosperity blessing for the group today. I ask that we be able to recognize the prosperity and abundance that we already have. I ask that we be able to recognize the love and the support that we already have. Tell me one thing they heard today that they think they'd like to remember or they'd like to stick with them or something that stood out. Or just a thought you had while I was talking.
Well, it seems like the more honest I am with myself, the less conflict I'll have in my external world.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a biggie. That's a biggie.
And I'll let people be. Just be themselves.
Just let people be, damn it.
Get the best out of them.
Thank you. Anybody else? Anybody
I like the detour thought? Of fear.
Yeah.
I take that detour frequently.
Thank you. And isn't that a cool way to look at it?
It is a cool way to look at
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I just took a little detour into fear. You know. Anybody haven't had a chance to sign the contact list for this class? Everybody.
I didn't. Thanks, brother.
Yeah, detour in the fear. That's another one I want. Let people be detour in the fear. Anybody else have any other thoughts that kind of stood out for them? So, if I was to ask us, what is it that's causing any conflict or fear that we feel right now? What would be the answer based on what we heard today? If I'm feeling conflict, what does that mean?
I'm not being honest.
Yeah, it means I'm not being honest. And then from a Course perspective, what does I'm not being honest mean? I'm not being consistent. Isn't that interesting though? I'm not being consistent with myself right now. That just feels powerful even just to say that. I'm not being consistent with myself right now. That's why I had this fear. Mm-hmm. I'm not being consistent. I'm not consistently focusing on the truth. I'm not being consistent in my peace.
So here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not consistent, I mean, I know when I'm not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So the approach I take is to attack myself and say, be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just becomes more of a complicated mess because I'm not saying, I forgive you for not being consistent. I say to myself, you know what, you're not practicing what you... You're not practicing. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So it becomes more, even more conflicting.
Actually, think about it. It was so interesting when you were saying that, because when you were saying it, I could see what was happening and what I do too. You said, I'm not being consistent. I'm in conflict because I'm not being consistent. Then you judged it.
Yeah. That's exactly what I said.
Right. And that's where the conflict is coming in. The conflict is not coming from you telling yourself that you're being inconsistent. The conflict is coming from you beating yourself up and judging yourself about being inconsistent. The way to get past it is to realize that that's just what a part of your mind's been trained to do. And you go ahead and you let that part of your mind do its thing, and then you just keep on moving toward being more consistent. And you get right past your ego.
In other words,
if you don't beat yourself up about beating yourself up, then you stop beating yourself up.
Got it.
You see what I'm saying? Yep. If I can be angry without beating myself up about getting angry, if I can be angry without getting angry about me getting angry, then that's how I get rid of my anger. That's why I've been enjoying my emotions a lot more. It's like now when I just feel angry or guilty or sad or whatever, I just go ahead and feel it. You know, right now, you know, I'm royally PO'd. Okay. And don't try to judge it. Don't try to, you're not spiritual. Yeah, Earl, if you was really being spiritual right now, you really wouldn't feel, you wouldn't be mad at him, you know what I'm saying? It's like, Earl, in order to be spiritual, I want you to feel your anger. In order to be spiritual, I want you to feel what you feel right now. That is spiritual involvement. If you could look at me in the face and you could tell me, ask you how you felt, and you can look at me right in the face and say, you know, girl, right now, you know, I'm taking a little detour into fear.
It'd be impossible for us not to have our feelings. We wouldn't be human.
And so that's what I'm saying. So what's happening is that we have in the feelings, but we judge in the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying. But so your mind would say, well, I just got to stop judging. And I'm saying, no, don't even take that. You know that approach don't work. I just got to stop judging. That'll never work, right? You know that'll never work, right? So it's more like, you know, I'm not going to judge myself for judging myself. You know, it's okay. However I feel about this is okay. You know, because it's going to change. I've never had a feeling that didn't change into another feeling in my whole life. I've never had a permanent feeling that didn't change. So it's like, Earl, you need to just get rid of that whole idea. Like, however you feel in the day, you're going to be feeling forever. This is it. This is the big one. I know all the rest of them change. But this one right here, this is the one that ain't going to never change. You know what I'm saying? We know it is. I can't tell you how many times people have called me in total panic. Like the world was about to come to the end. And for whatever reason, maybe I didn't get the call or I couldn't answer right then. And I call them back the next day and they'll say, what? What you talking about? I mean, they would act like they was about to jump off the roof. You know what I'm saying? And I found it to be true 99% of the time. Only thing that people need is just some time. And if they let a little time pass by, no matter what's happening, they begin to get a grip on themselves. They really do. We're stronger than we think. We don't give ourselves enough credit. But if you let that feeling go through you and don't try to stop it, it'll pass through faster. You know, I'm being inconsistent. That's cool. Oh, okay, that just means I just need to focus on my goal a little bit more. Cool. I think I'll go to the movie now. You see what I'm saying? Oh, I think I'll go to the movie. Well, all right. I hate my mama. Okay, I'll go get a steak. You know what I'm saying? So you hate your mama. Big deal. You hate your mama. Big deal. So what? Are you going to kill your mama? No. Am I going to attack my mama? No. You know, I'm just hating my mama. Okay. Big deal. Okay. Feel your hate for your mama. Feel all your hate for your mama. Let all the hate from your mama that you could possibly bring up. Come on. Let me see you can do better than that. You know you got more hate than that. What about when you were 6 years old? Come on. You got more hate. Let it up. You just got to let it up. And just feel it. Just feel that hate. Just feel that blame. Just feel that call for love that you have. And if you don't fight it, if you don't judge it, it will move right up out of you and be gone. And you won't hate your mama no more. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't hate my mama. It's bad for me to hate my mama. See, I'm trying to press it down. You know, I shouldn't hate my mama. I'm a bad person for hating my mama. See, I'm repressing it. I'm keeping it in. Mm-hmm. I hate my mama. I shouldn't hate my mama. I hate my mama. That's the way I felt about my mama. I hate my mama. See, you can just feel it. You can just feel it going right through me. I shouldn't hate my mama.
My mom and I went out to lunch yesterday and had an interesting conversation. She's one of those that always tries to correct her.
Mm-hmm.
She's a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She did that to me when I was little all the time. But we sat and had a really good conversation, and we just interchanged thoughts and
mm-hmm.
stuff. We're talking
mm-hmm.
about books.
Mm-hmm.
And we never correct. She didn't correct me, and I didn't try and correct her. It was really cool. But she told me, and you were talking about that physical manifestation, you know, PMS, anything that's going on, physical manifestation. She had migraines since she was like 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And she also told me that my dad would do relaxation things with her and tell her toes were relaxed. And I never knew my dad did that. But to try and help her relax in the brain. And she finally woke up one morning and thought, my mom doesn't like me very much. And her migraines went away. And it was the realization that she had been repressing something, holding something down, and it manifested itself in a physical form.
Mm-hmm.
And she, when she let that go and said, okay, my mom doesn't like me very much, she let go.
Well, what did she do? What did she do? She did just what we were told today. She was honest.
Yep.
She said the conflict and the pain come from self-deception.
Yep.
And she stopped deceiving herself and let herself really see what was going on. Then she had a healing, and that's true for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. All right, y'all. That's it. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.